Hello, and welcome to Living Vertical Radio, where we change the narrative of media by introducing you to creative and innovative individuals that inspire you with their unique stories. Our host is C. Steen Duckworth, and you can call in or Skype into this program by calling 1-646-668-2928 #1. Please make sure your surrounding area is quiet because this is a live program. One Sure Sign Mobile Notary of Frisco, Texas provides professional notary service across the Dallas metro area. Our notary professionals are ready to help you with loan closings, power of attorney, fingerprinting, and other notary services. We meet you at your location of choice, your home, office, hospital, or local coffee shop, convenient to your schedule. Reliable, professional, and affordable. One Sure Sign is happy to support Living Vertical Radio here in Texas. Mention you heard this ad on Living Vertical for $5 off any notary service. Interested in advertising on our podcast with a listening audience of over 800,000? You can do a 15-second business ad, a 30-second radio ad, or a 10-minute interview radio ad. Our prices start out at $50. Contact us at info@verticalmediagroup.com. Our pricing is made to give everyone the ability to advertise no matter the budget. Thank you, and here's your host, C. Steen Duckworth.
And hello, everyone. Good evening in some places. Thank you for being a part of our program today, and thank you to Frisco, Texas, and One Sure Sign Mobile Notary for your sponsorship of this program today. So, I am C. Steen Duckworth, and today we have author Edwina Jean Adams with us. So, let me give you a little bit of synopsis on the book that she's written. It's called Living Life After Death. Grief can be a strange thing, a familiar thing that we can all relate to, but it can be such a strange experience, one unique to each of us. We have all grieved a loved one or someone we loved after death. We all go through the stages of or phases of grief, even when we don't understand what we are experiencing. However, this turn of events in this story is based around the untreated mental health crisis of grief. It took me to places I could never have imagined going, nor could I have ever known existed. Get ready for your mind to be twisted as we live life after death. And that's just a short, just a part of the synopsis for her book. Edwina Jean Adams is a native of Linden, Alabama. She is a graduate of Demopolis High School. She also has an educational background in social work, urban planning, psychology, and sociology. She earned a bachelor's degree from Faulkner University in Montgomery, Alabama, in human resources and specializes in management. A three-time self-published author and has written three novels, What Death Do We Part One, What Death Do We Part Two, and Living Life After Death. She became, Living Life After Death became her first bestseller book also. She is the founder of the McKinsey Foundation, and the McKinsey Foundation became into being after her nine-year-old niece committed suicide due to racial bullying. So we're going to welcome author Edwina Jean Adams, and we're going to talk about her book, her journey, and the McKinsey Foundation. Welcome, Edwina. How are you?
I am awesome. Hello.
How are you doing today?
I'm awesome, awesome, awesome. This has been a long time coming. Girl, I've been trying to get on your show forever. And I am so grateful to be here tonight. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I know. It's been such a busy, busy year. And I was wanting to get you on here, and I said, "Oh my God, let's make this happen." So welcome today, yes. And I'm really excited to talk mm-hmm. about all that you're doing. So tell me, how did you start writing?
Well, oh Jesus. So I'm not a traditional writer, so I'm going to say that off the top. Everything happened after the death of my 9-year-old niece. That is the truth of everything that I write about. My books are okay. fictional. However, they have a real life underlining, and it did happen from different parts of my life, some, you know, of others. But all of my books are fiction, yet with a real life basis. So I started writing after the death of my 9-year-old niece. She had committed suicide in our family home in Alabama due to racial bullying in school. And after that, the word death, just the living the life after death, which is the main reason for book number 3's title, is because I'm living life after the death of my niece. But What Death mm-hmm. Do We Part 1 and 2 was just a vehicle to drive more funds to help me manage and keep up with all of the speaking engagements that I had. I was receiving to speak on behalf of the McKinsey Foundation when I go out and talk about bullying. And so that's why I started writing, to fund where I needed to go, getting the buttons and pamphlets and all the things that I give away when I go out and speak on behalf of the McKinsey Foundation. So that's why I started writing.
Okay. And then how did you get to the self-publishing, and was there anyone helping you with this process, or it's just something that you decided you were going to do and you went through the whole process?
So it's two parts. I do have a writing coach, Jess Jade, the book plug. I love her. She's helped me publish all 3 of my books. Our writing coach, she is my writing coach, and we have a long history that we're going to continue on because we're doing so many different things with this book. But
right.
I wanted to be self-published because before then I was a radio, TV show, production, podcast host, and I always talked and preached independency, sign yourself, you know, artists always want to be signed by Universal or this person or that person, sign yourself. And it would have been just hypocritical of me if I would have went with a publishing company and I can just sign myself, and that's what I did. So my books are my business. I am EJNA LLC. It is a business. I have my license and all of that. So all of my books are my business, and I signed myself. I did have help, of course, with my writing coach, which you all need that. We all need someone to help us that is professional in that particular field that you're going in, and, of course, it costs money. I mean, who better to invest in you than you? Why would you expect someone else to come and give you money when you won't even give yourself money? Like, what? I believe in me, so I invested in myself. I got a writing coach. I self-published 3 books. One of them is a bestseller, and I get paid every 29th of each month from my royalties of all 3 books.
Right.
I've no one. All money comes to me is deposited. What's the day? Tomorrow it'll be deposited. I'll wake up to my money.
Well, it's really an inspiring message to tell individuals that, hey, you can be independent, you know. So you are proving that you can be an independent and make your own life, make your own story. So what were some of the challenges when you were doing your book and actually becoming your own corporation?
The biggest, book 1 and 2 were more of my, I'm just going to let it go. Girl, I'm just going to write this. I mean, it's just going to be juicy. We just going to do it all. Book 3 was my hardest book because I went into talk, even though it's fiction, and book 3 goes into actual the science fiction more so than just fictitious stories. It went into the paranormal. The ghost world, the paranormal world, and all of those things in book number 3. But the beginning of book 3, which is Living Life After Death, I went into a lot of things that family, even that facing COVID-19 and all of the deaths that's taken place over this year, is how when someone passed, how other people want to be the center of your family's issue. Other people want to be seen or want to tell the story before you get the story out. And I just go in on everybody. Like, I just went in. And why it was so hard for me was because I was reliving those feelings and the day that I found out and how I heard and what happened when I got to the hospital, who was there, how the community took it. I mean, I just went in. I talked about people that do these fish fries and they doing it in the name of the dead, but the family never saw a penny of it. So I talked about a lot of people in book number three because it made me relive what I went through, but it also was there to help others that have read and given me reviews that they went through the same thing. And it's finally finally time for someone to talk about people trying to come up or ride a wave of someone's dead loved one. Like, no. And for me, for our family, it was even worse because it was this quote-unquote word bullying. Bullying. It's so many bullying advocate organizations that hadn't advocated for bullying online since we went virtual. But the McKinsey Foundation has, because bullying never stopped. It just changed courses. And people that had bullying events and was talking about bullying, most of them were just riding waves. Me and my family, we live this every day. It is real life for us. It's not a game. It's not a joke. It's not McKinsey going to pop from behind and scream. No, she's dead. She's in the ground.
Well,
that's where I left her.
Well, tell me a little bit more about the racial bullying, because you brought something up that I know a lot of young minority children go through, which is really racial bullying. But tell me what was going on and the bullying with your niece, and how long did it take you guys to know that it was getting that bad, or did you know it was getting that bad?
Well, we knew that she was being bullied from probably a couple of weeks into school. This part of Alabama, the school she went to was predominantly white, where we're from, in Alabama, rural area, and there's only like two schools you go to. This one, you go to that one. So she went to the more predominantly white school. But because she had a white friend that she rode to school with, because towns in the city and the country, the distance is different. So the from the town that we were in, where we're from, to the town where she had to go to school, my mom and the other little boy's mom would rotate taking them, you know, because of the distance. That's how we do it in the country. And she would be, you know, ride to school with the white kid, and the white kids at the school didn't particularly care for it. And so they would bully her. He was bullied as well, but more so her, you know, because, oh, you got a white friend, or, you know, just nitpicking because either she wasn't their friend or they couldn't be her friend. However it was in their head, they bothered her, they tortured her, they, you know, called, you know, just all the different mean things that, you know, kids do. And when we found out, my mom and my sister knew, you know, like first couple of weeks of school, she told us. She even told me, you know, I live here in Georgia, and she lived in Alabama. We knew. And some of the teachers' kids graduated high school with me, so I would tell her, hey, take this picture, you know, tell my mom or whoever, give her a picture of me, take it to school, show the teacher, say, hey, I'm Edwina's niece. And she said, you know, tell these kids to leave me alone, things like that, you know. So we knew the question was, did we know it was this bad? We knew about everything that was going on. We did not know that she would commit suicide. No, we did not know it had gotten mentally that far in her head, because 2 weeks before she committed suicide, a little girl in Birmingham she was the same age, 9, had committed suicide. And, you know, the family actually had sat down and talked about, you know, what was going on with her and how, you know, it was related to what she was dealing with in school. And she was just like, oh, no, I wouldn't do that. And, you know, blah, blah, blah. And you know, so with that conversation, everybody was kind of like, okay, so that's not in her mind. That's not something she would do. So, you know, the talk was had. All measures, for the most part, that we can think of and have thought, it's been 2 years almost, that we could have thought of, was taken. Even talking to the school, going to the school, meeting my mom, my sister, phone calls, letters, you know, showing up. They did it. They did it.
Yeah, right. So then you created the McKinsey Foundation. Tell me what the McKinsey Foundation does differently from any other Foundation when it comes to bullying?
So what the McKinsey Foundation does, we do not shun or want to hurt or cause pain or embarrassment to the bully. What the McKinsey Foundation do, we seek healing. So when I speak, I start off with the icebreaker, asking a question and asking the kids or family or whoever's in the audience to come up and say, I'm the bully. I'm the victim. I've seen it done. It happened to me. It happened to someone I know, but I did nothing. It happened to someone I know, and I helped them. And I go to each of these spaces, and I ask someone that question. Tell me what happened. How did you help them? Why were you afraid to help? Why were you the bully? And so many people don't understand, even though bullying is wrong, bullying is bad, bullying will cause someone to kill themselves, all of that is yes, but that bully also is a leader. And the McKinsey Foundation realized that very early on, that bullies are leaders. Why? Because it's another segment in my PowerPoint presentation where I talk about the bullying ring. The bully is the ring leader of that ring, but everyone is involved following what the bully is telling you to do. That's a leader. A leader gives out commands, tell people what to do. That's what a bully is. But a bully is bullying and leading people in the wrong direction. And the McKinsey Foundation talks, points out, and we set out to go and find the bully and teach them, you are a leader, let's lead in the right direction. So the entire bullying has to be healed, because the bully starts first. When they begin to change, that whole circle and atmosphere can change from that point forward.
Mm-hmm. So how is that? How has that school continued on after McKinsey? How have they continued on the school?
The school?
Right. How has the school continued on?
Well, dismissing it, they in the papers, they said nothing happened. They couldn't find anything or whatever. But, you know, the underlying quiet, you know how in a small town, everybody knows the truth.
Right.
But when it's a big corporation with attorneys and all of that power behind them, it's kind of our word against theirs. So
Right. So how often do you think racial bullying happens in schools that is probably not talked about?
Every day. I work in the school system here in Georgia. It's every day.
Uh-huh.
Every day.
Uh-huh.
The thing is, with leading the McKinsey Foundation and connecting with people that don't have a motive to make money off of just the word, the wave of bullying, I've found out that I had to start teaching the parents how to document, how to send emails, who to send the emails to, and always keep your copy. Always have a copy.
Right.
Always have a paper trail. And so that's a part of the McKinsey Foundation as well. In my PowerPoint presentation, I specifically talk to parents and explain to them how to document. Documenting via emails, via writing it down, via voice messages, via recording, whatever it takes to document, to keep your information, so that as you go to these different individuals, you can have a paper trail, date and stamp what you said, to whom you said it, and what was the outcome from what was talked about. And those things is what have that credibility of what you as the parent is talking about. I had to learn that people expect, because I'm a black woman, that I was supposed to have this angry black woman mentality. No, I'm not happy at all. I'm not. But I also am very well educated, as you read. And I do know that there are laws. I do work in the school system, and there are things that can and will be done. So with that information from inside, also having to deal with it on the outside, I knew how not to handle the situation and what to do. So building the foundation, getting myself credibility, I am running in the election 2022. More of me will be showing up after this election November the 3rd. for a school board member, because as I get a title, I can make changes that needs to be made. As a civilian, as a auntie that lost her niece, I'm just, oh, she's just hurting. No, I'm going to get a title, and we're going to change it for everyone, not just me and my family that is hurting, but other people's families that are hurting that don't have the strength to stand and go as I have. I don't know where I get it from. God gave it to me. I appreciate it.
Well, I love it. Yeah, I love your determination and your you know, your energy. So tell me about the decision to run for office, because, you know, for me, I believe more minorities need to be running for these offices in their community. It was interesting. I spent a vacation in Georgia when Stacey Abrams was running against Kemp, and she said something that was very eye-opening for me, and I don't think a lot of people think about that, but she said one of the things about being a governor, she said you actually have more power than the president. She said in your own state, you can make changes in your state, and that was really a powerful thing, because I thought, like what you're saying, I'm always like, more minorities, moms and dads and, you know, aunts and uncles need to run for some of these public offices in the school. If you don't like what's going on, run for these offices, school superintendent, you know, Department of Education, because then we're in the position to make great changes. So what, you know, were you overwhelmed? Were you scared of running for a position like that? So how did you feel making that decision?
The decision to run for school board was the hardest. The hardest part about that was deciding if I wanted to start low and go big or start at the top and then just fall back wherever. Because I'm one of those ones, okay, so you say I can't do what? Oh, I'll show you better than I can tell you. So I actually was going to go for school board, county commissioner or state senate. I was just going to go for it. I was just going to leap off the end, and I didn't know where I was going to end up, but hey, I was going for it. But I talked to some people, some black, some minority leaders in the community, from the NAACP all the way to people in my hometown that are now mayors, black women, just people that have come into power in an elected position, and I was like, just tell me, what do you think? What would be your idea to do for me for my agenda? My agenda is to make laws and changes in the name of McKenzie. And so they told me, you know, start at the school level, because that's where the issue was in the school. So once I get that title in the school, I only want, because I tell everybody, I only want 4 years. That's all it's going to take for me. That's what trips me out about this president, is that you want to talk about what will do and not what you have done. All I need is 4 years, baby. Once I get my first day to the day, the last day I leave, I'm not even going to run again, because I'm going to come. My plan is to come in and execute day one. I'm not stopping. And then I used to work in the county in which I'm running for, so I already know more than most of the candidates have an idea about. I used to be a bus driver. I know what the bus drivers need. My niece committed suicide due to racial bullying. I know racial bullying happened. So laws will be changed. Policies, procedures will be revised once my foot steps in the door. And you don't have to have meetings about it, babe. For me and these communities these past 2 years, I already got the plan, boo. You just read what I'm giving you and let's add it into it. It's nothing you have to do. I'm coming with all the solutions. Everything that I have a problem with, I'm coming with a solution. That's how I live my day-to-day life. If there's an issue, I don't bring an issue to anybody that I don't have a solution for. You may not always like my solution, so we can add and negotiate and revise it. Cool, but I always come with a solution.
Well, let's talk about your family. How is you have two children, and
yes.
Can you tell me, how does your family support you in the endeavors that you're doing right now? How do they support you as getting ready to run for office and being your own CEO in the McKenzie Foundation? How do they support you with all of that?
My mom and my sister, of course, I was just like, thank you. You know, we couldn't do it. And I can't wait till they build that strength up, because people think my story, my part of what I got from this, is powerful. Y'all hadn't heard nothing yet. My mom's story, my sister's story, is just, you think I bring you to tears, they going to have everybody on the floor. But they are thankful that I stood up and I'm fighting not only for Mackenzie, but for so many other Mackenzies that are afraid to talk. Even when I go out and speak, so many kids come up to me, parents come up to me like, thank you. Oh, my God, thank you. You've given me the strength to go to the school and you know, have this paperwork. You know, they're not just showing up, you know, ghetto and alley. They're showing up with a plan. I give them that courage to show up and go and dig up all the things that you need to make your case, because people are not going to take you serious if you're just fussing and having a rant. They're going to take you serious right. When you step up, you have your paper, you know what you're talking about, you are very serious, you're confident in what you're saying, and they can't knock you. They cannot knock you.
Right.
What they will do is try to discredit you, but with paperwork and with facts, it can't happen. It won't happen.
That's true.
My mom and my sister, my dad, they, you know, thank me. My children are, you know, coming up as my ambassadors. They're excited. They love it. They like, okay, mom, let's do it. What we need to do, because like my son and Mackenzie were 6 months apart, so they was like cousin twins. So
they
call on the phone, you know, every day, and you know, always, you know, she told him about it, but he will always, you know, it's going to be okay. You know, make sure you tell, you know, my mom, grandma, whoever, and, you know, and she just wanted to get away when she's at home and when she's talking with and hanging and being with family, just, you know, leave all of that behind. I ain't there, you know, let me enjoy my family. So, yeah, everybody is on board. They are very thankful, and I'm glad that it's here. And as it grows, I pray that they will come on board so they can start doing these presentations and giving their testimony of their side of the story.
Now, you said in the book, it said, you know, even though it's based on true events in the story, but there is something that we don't talk about is untreated mental health.
Yes.
So give me some idea of what you meant by the untreated mental health.
So in the book, not for me, because my mental health, you know, talking with my therapist, my mental health has been doing what I'm doing. I'm writing about it. I'm speaking about it. That's how I heal, by continuing to talk about it. The more I talk about it, the less I cry. In the beginning, I would be in the middle of my speech, and I just, give me a second, you know, and I'll shed some tears. But now I'm able to get through, like, my 45-minute presentation and, you know, just keep rolling. And I usually shed a tear when kids come up and hug me, you know, because I see Mackenzie's face all over them. So those are my therapeutic sessions as I speak, talk, and see healing in other people's lives that's also helping me heal. But in the book, I am talking about untreated mental health, where it goes into psychosis, like they're tripping,
right.
or schizophrenia, or what is sleep apnea, different things like that. And when they go in, when the character Pam goes into those stages in the book, she has interventions with ghosts, with the paranormal. Good ghost and bad ghost, and, you know, bad ghost takes over the spirit and goes, you know, start killing people and things of that nature. So untreated mental health in the real world may not go as to the left as it does in my book, but it can happen. You can start having don't know reality. You don't know if you're woke or if you sleep, and you're trying to live, and you don't know which life you're living, if you're, you know, woke or you sleep. And it can get confusing if you don't get your mental health checked. So,
right.
Yes.
So do you think that a lot of the media and the social media is a contributing factor in our kids when it comes to mental health and, you know, what they may be going through in school?
Yes, because mm-hmm. I think as an adult too, because people, let's go to TV,
right.
Let's go to these reality shows. Let's take Atlanta one to be exact, the Atlanta, Housewives, I think that's what they're called.
Uh-huh.
People have to understand that this is fake. it's fake. They live it, they portray it as if this is their life. Off camera, most of those women are best friends. They go on set with mindset, this is my contract, this is how much money I'm going to get, and this is how many fights I have to create. No matter what, who it is, I have to create this many fights walking onto set.
It looks okay.
Because in their contract, they just got to create four fights over the season. It doesn't tell them who to create it with, but it has to happen. So whenever a heated argument, it has to go left because that's in their contract, or they're going to forfeit their $2 million. They ain't going to forfeit their $2 million because off screen, they hugging it and hanging out and going on trips and all of those things that they cannot really show you on social media because of their contract. People can't separate you in real life. They think these ladies really hate each other. They think these ladies are this and that and the third. In the contract, it may send them that way. That's why some of them leave, because they will breach the contract agreement. They don't leave because somebody jumped on them, or this, because they will breach or don't want to breach the contract, so they don't go back. They don't leave. She didn't leave because she hated them. She didn't want to do the terms of the contract. There's contracts in place in these people. Because when you see them in their real element, these people are not what you see on TV. And I know that because I've met most of them. So people that don't meet people like that on a daily basis, they think it's real. And they try to live their lives. Oh, I want that relationship. The relationship is not real. They didn't cheat on their husband for real. The show shows like they did, but in real life, they did not. Everybody knows it's a contract. It's a contract. Mm-hmm. The TV show's fake. The kids and their parents want to live a life according to what's fake and not what's real. And so they can't separate the two. So they try to go and buy all these name brands and all of this and want to go on all these trips and know they can't afford it. Now you're looking like, oh, do I get gas or do I feed myself? Well, if you hadn't bought that bag that was $400 when you could have pay the light bill, and, you know, instead, you know, just live your truth. You are not living your truth trying to live something that's already fake. Live your truth. And yes, has a lot to do with it. You can angle certain things to make it look like this, or, you know, just live your truth. And people are so afraid to do that because you think you're missing out, but you're not. You're not missing out on something that's fake. You're missing out on your life that you should be living, your truth.
Well, you know, one of the things that I learned when my husband died was that going through the grief process, and I'm not sure if everyone does, but there was a lot of things I learned that were, you know, part of, you know, my belief. And there was just things that I learned, and it really kind of helped me go through the grieving process a little bit easier. Was there anything in your process that made it easier for you to go through the phases? Were there any reflections or thoughts? Because I know that some people manage to go through that process pretty quickly, and some people, like you said, they bury it. Some people have a very hard time, and it takes them years and years and years. Is there any special time frame for people to go through grief? Is there, and do you think there's something that you learned from going through the grief?
There is no time frame. There is no time frame. When the McKinsey Foundation, when I talk about grief in my presentation, I tell people sometimes the relationship we are currently in or are currently in that are hurt is because of a death that happened 10, 20 years ago, because you haven't gotten over that thing. And it's okay, but recognize it first and let's heal from there. I was talking to a friend last night, and they was like, I can't delete my brother's number out of my phone because, and the brother passed almost six, seven years ago. And I said, well, I haven't deleted Mackenzie's number out of my phone. She's been passed 2 years. And what I told my friend was that don't force yourself to let go of that. As long as you are living in your now and you're planning for a future, you want to bring that person with you. And if a number is what you have to bring with you to be happy and to remember that person by, bring that number with you. Don't rush the memory of that person away because you think it's time to let go. Let go when it's really time. Because because he was talking to me about it, that means he's not ready to let go. I'm not ready to let go. I'm going to keep my kids on my phone until, you know, I'm ready to let go. I'm not ready yet. I'm not ready. I know if I call that number, somebody's going to answer, but I'm never going to call the number. But seeing her name with the number, just like, okay, baby girl, I'm going to keep going for you. But there is no time frame. So many people have lost people during COVID. It's okay. You're going to grieve, but what I don't want people to do is to die in that grief. Don't lose yourself.
Right.
Don't get depressed and down. You know, live for the memory of that person. Remember the great times and live and go to the next level. Elevate where you are in that zone that you're in. Don't be comfortable. Don't lose sight of what is good for you. Remember what y'all had, if you guys had talked about future things or we plan to do this, do it. Open that business in the memory of your loved one. Those things will help you keep moving. I believe because the name of it is McKinsey Foundation and not just the Bullion Foundation, I go so hard because it's her name. Her memory and her name makes me go harder for the foundation. So do something in the memory of that loved one to keep you going and elevating yourself on their behalf. So grieving does not have time. It has no expiration. That's going to be on the individual. It changes from person to person, and sometimes it changes from day to day. Some days I'm overwhelmed with just like, oh, my God, I miss my baby girl, you know. Or I'm in the store and I see some boots because I called her my boot girl. And I'm like, oh, I can't get that for her. Oh, my God. And I just kind of leave out the store like I don't even want to be in here no more. You know, some days are better and worse than others, and that's okay. As long as you don't get down, depressed, and relapse, just keep going forward. Keep going. You're going to have those moments and have them. You got to have them because if you don't and you bury it, it's going to kill you. Unleash the hurt. Unleash the pain. Unleash the grief. Talk to someone. Get up, talk it over. You can't always talk to friends and family. They won't understand if they have not been there and if they're not ready to move forward. You have to be ready and willing to move forward, and that's what happened with me, with the McKinsey Foundation, with writing these books. We continue to talk about and even say in her name to move forward in her name. That's why I do it.
What's the next project for you in the McKinsey? You know, you have the McKinsey Foundation, you're running for office, and so what is the next project for you on your journey? What's the next thing that's coming out for you?
So book number 4 will be dropping in December. The McKinsey Foundation, I started this month, which is an anti-bullying month in October. November and December, the first Saturday of those months, which is November 7th and December the 5th, I have been doing virtual bullying events where I've been taking my PowerPoint presentation that I would do in a public auditorium, arena, gymnasium or whatever, and I'm breaking it up apart and doing a 90-minute segment with professionals to give more credibility to what I've been saying, which this month, October 3rd was my first one. It is called the McKinsey Foundation Presents Bullying in a Virtual World. And so I had teachers, I had a student, I had a Board of Education member, and we talked about where do you stand when it comes to bullying. And that is a part of my PowerPoint presentation. This month, November 7th event, is called the McKinsey Foundation Presents Bullying in a Virtual World. And our topic this for November will be policy, procedures, and paperwork, which is what I talked about earlier. But I'm going to have a police officer, a nurse, a teacher, a student, and what's the other? I have another profession. Another nurse. I have two nurses, and they will be talking about what they expect, what their expectation is when they are notified about bullying. If a police officer is notified about bullying, what does the police officer do? The nurse, what does she do? The teacher, what does she do? If a student is dealing with bullying, what do they do? And we talk about policy, procedures, and paperwork, and these are the things that I want to continue to get over to my parents that will be listening, that, hey, these are the things, these are the steps that you have to take in this virtual world. We're talking about virtual now, because some kids are face-to-face, but they're still bullying happening virtually, and so we will be tackling those issues. In December, which is McKenzie's death anniversary of 2 years, we will be doing testimonies of people that have overcome bullying and even attempted suicide. So December will be a little more emotional because it will be her 2-year death anniversary, and we will be encouraging those that have thought about suicide, that are dealing with bullies. Let's come forward. Let's talk. Let's speak. Get in touch with myself. I can get them to my therapist. I can talk with them. I can sit with them or be on a Zoom call with them and mediate with them with the school like I've done so many times since March. Jesus, it's uncountable at this point. Mm-hmm. And that's what I do. I have dedicated my life to this because I don't want another family to bury a child when it doesn't have to happen.
Well, definitely when you have these programs, please share them with us. I think it would be something great that we can share in our magazine and encourage people to, come and see what you're doing, because I think that's the part that I think most parents feel helpless when they don't know what to do. Their children are coming home and saying, hey, I'm being bullied. And a lot of parents, I don't think, really know how to handle it,
Right.
I think that the more you empower them, when you're empowered, then you're subject to not sit around and not say anything.
Right.
And so I think what you're doing is great by bringing those individuals in and having them see it from all sides, and also teaching the parents what you can do, about it, because it's, and it's been tough going through COVID. So, the other issues that being home and being, feeling like you're under the gun, and then when you're back at school, and then it's just all these emotions coming. It's great to be able to, be able to go to something like what you're doing and seeing what's going on. So that's great. One of the positive things I've seen about, and I will say that a lot of things that I told a lot of my friends that when we were going through COVID is like, okay, so you got to be careful. You're going to have to change some things. But there are opportunities during this time. And, the opportunities for you to be planning a business, the opportunities for you to help someone. I have a here in Arizona, and I know it's nationwide, but I got on the Nextdoor app, and believe me, I'm like, because I am not the social media person. I'm not on there. And it's funny because people contact me and I'm like, hey, I don't need sitting there on social media. Okay. So you're subject to hear from me like in a few days. So unless you pick up the phone. All right. And so it was kind of cool. So someone invited me and I'm like, oh my God, do I want to be on this app? Because that means people are going to be dinging me all the time. So anyway, I got on the app, and there's like 25 neighborhoods in our community, which is rich. I love my community. There's they estimate that there's 27 different languages spoken in this community. And so I love the community. Everybody pretty much tries to take care. So anyway, I was on the app, and it was actually going through COVID. It was pretty nice. People were like, hey, I'm going to Costco. Does anybody need anything? I'll drop it off at your house. People were, they were reaching out to the older people that lived alone in their neighborhood. And actually, some days it got to be hilarious because, if something was going on, and then, it would be a long feed and it would just be hilarious, okay?
Right.
But but the other thing that was good is that it's been, even though we don't see each other and we're on an app, it's been very useful. I realize a lot of our people in our neighborhood are very, they make sure everyone's taken care of if they see something that's not right. And, and I really wish more communities can be like that,
Right.
In the sense that, you kind of take care, because, you essentially all have to go through the same thing. okay?
Right.
You're not escaping it because of color or wealth or any of that. You're going to go through the same thing. So it's been great for that. So I'm really, you know what, I really love what you're doing, and I'm thinking here, I was like, oh my God, this lady has so much energy. I would have never, and I'm a writer, but I would have never, I don't know how it's hard when you're going through grief. Now, when my husband died, I had all these sticky notes on my walls that were things that he used to say that made me laugh. And I think I had him up there for at least, I don't know, 7 months, because I would wake up and there were some notes there, and I had notes in the bathroom and, everywhere. So, that was kind of how I dealt with it, and then I was thinking one day, I was like, man, it would be cool if he could text me, you just things that you say when you're going through that. And it was funny, my girlfriend texted me. I mean, we had, her and her husband knew me and my husband, and so she texted me, and it was kind of rare for her to text me, and just to tell you, her husband died 2 months before my husband.
Aww.
And we were all friends, and he had sickle cell anemia, and so I was kind of like, oh, I wish my husband would, text me right now, because, I mean, like, it's so funny the things you think of. And she texted me, and so we start talking and kind of hanging out, and that late night calls, just to kind of keep each other going. And so she's a business strategist, so me and my husband had a business. We had this business, and I said, well, I need some help with, maintaining my business. And I start volunteering with her. So it's been wonderful, because we've been able to bounce things off of each other when we were going through our grief, and still be friends even after that, So I think it's great that you've written a book and you've taken that, because that first part of the book, I read the first part of the book, chapter one, and I was like, dang, that was like just all the emotion in that first paragraph was intense.
Yes,
it was really intense. And so every one of my listeners who's out there, even if you're not going through this, you should get this book. It's called Living Life After Death. It is available on Amazon. And the author and your writing name, Edwina, is Ejene.
Ejene, yes.
Okay, Ejene, everybody, Ejene. Ejene. But we'll also be, we'll also have this up on our magazine, and you'll be able to have the link that goes straight to Amazon for Edwina's book. So looking forward to that. So how can people help you, Edwina, with the McKenzie Foundation or, with all the things that you're doing? How can they help you? How can they support you?
Supporting is getting the books. I do have authorejene.com. All three books is right up under my picture. Click on it. It'll take you straight to Amazon to order it. 99-cent ebook, $14.99 paperback. But if you need me to come to your church, event, whatever, virtually, I've been doing it virtually. And I can talk with you. I've had so many calls with kids that's trying to commit suicide due to bullying in school virtually. Just inbox me. My Facebook is Edwina Jene Adams. You can contact me on my website, authorejene.com. And if you are on Instagram, it's ejene_1, and that's ejene_1. DM me, just reach out to me. I will definitely answer. I will get to you. I will help you. If I can't help you, I have people on my resource list that can get, help you with the problems that you may be facing. I have therapists. I have other organizations. I have police officers. I just have a plethora of people, and if you want to help and be added to that list as a therapist, somebody that I can refer to you that's dealing with mental illnesses or something in their home, and confidentiality is very, 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 very important. Even coming from the school system, even over here doing what I do, motivational speaking with the McKenzie Foundation, and even, encouraging with my books and all of those things, confidentiality is just something that is a must. And so I just make sure I respect every person that is referred to me, and those that I work with giving other referrals, that they do the same.
Yes, so great. And so, and definitely we'll be contacting you, because I would love to be able to share your next two, you know, your bullying, the McKinsey Foundation, what you're doing for parents and bringing in nurses and police officers. So I would definitely love that information so I can share it with my audience as well. I think that's wonderful. And, you know, for you parents out there that are, you know, going through something with your child and not really knowing how to, you know, come out or talk to anybody about bullying. And so I'm going to let Edwina give us some last words on that.
So parents, I know that our kids are our babies, and we will go to the end of the earth for our children. But sometimes a person like myself, who's a stranger, and I'm a bus driver, they tell me everything. I know more about most parents than you could even imagine. But reach out to someone like myself, if not me, someone like me, that you can go and do research, find out my background, ask questions of who I am, and you can send your kids to me. Give me the questions you want me to get out of them, and I can get those answers for you, and I can help you. Because our kids don't want the parents to get crazy. And I know that sounds funny, but they don't want us to get crazy, because that kind of embarrass them or whatever, and they're just like, I just take it because I know my mom, my dad's going to cut up. So reach out to someone to get to them in a different way, because our kids are very smart. They're very intelligent. They're very tech savvy. So it's a lot of things that we as adults don't have a clue that our kids are dealing with. But because I'm in the school, it's not a lot of things that they can hide, because somebody gonna tell me. And so I know more than the average parent, because I do work with the school and work with students on a daily basis, and I can reach them a little different in an adult way. So just trust me. You can trust me, and we can get healing to our babies, because there are so many things that they can't comprehend, because they're not there yet mentally, and someone has to break it down to them in a way that they will understand. Because as parents, we're like, oh my God, you should know this, but they don't always know it. Because I'll give you this example, and I know I can talk long, but my son had an issue with math. He's a brilliant little boy, very smart in math, but he and his teacher was not getting the same answer, and I was like, maybe it's the way she's explaining it. So we went to YouTube, and we found a guy that explained it to him where he understood it. It wasn't that the teacher was wrong. It was just the way, the method in which she was giving it to the class. My son wasn't getting it. But if there was another method that got the same answer, and he understood that. So sometimes it's the method, not the delivery, not how we say, not even what we say, but the method in which it is said, that can get the answer that you're looking for. And so that's my key to you. And for anybody else that want to write books and do anything that you want to elevate yourself, you're in your zone, you're in the right place, just elevate. Go take a class, get that help, get a writing coach, whatever it is you want to do, whatever your dream is, now is the time to do it. We have 2 months left in 2020. Don't go into 2021 wishing and hoping that you have made that step. Do it today. Do it right now.
Thank you so much, Edwina. It's been a pleasure to have you on the program. And, you know, we have with all our guests, you're part of the Vertical family, so we'll be watching you, and, you know, we'll be pulling on you again to come and talk to us. But definitely, you know, we want to make sure that we share all your information. And, again, we'll be posting this on the magazine. We'll be sharing this with our social media community, so everyone can get the message. So thank you so much, Edwina. We appreciate you.
And thank you for having me.
Great. And I'd like to say thank you for our team for putting the program together and helping me with this. Thank you to our faithful audience for all your support. And definitely we want you to go get Regina's book, Living Life After Death. It's available on Amazon.com. And again, we'll be sharing all her information with you as we share this program. This has been a live program, and you will be able to pick it up tomorrow if you're not here on the show, and you'll be able to hear it on Living Vertical Radio at Blog Talk. Thank you, everybody, and have a great evening.